I will take a couple of minutes in a rather methodical, mechanical way to just respond. First, what I'm distressed about in the response to my remarks is that I did not manage, despite my strenuous efforts, to induce a respect for the distinction between political values, political goals, and moral goals. It's been lost completely on Dr. Molnar that I have not denigrated some of the virtues that he and I may agree on, some of the virtues that may indeed have found their expression in Christianity and other forms of theism. The reason I use the word theism is that I don't consider Christianity the only form of theism. But let me go point by point. I did observe the word ideology, because by ideology I mean a philosophical theory, political theory, which commands certain kinds of concerted effort on the part of individuals and governments to act. And capitalism in that sense is an ideology. It must act to protect liberty, and capitalism is an ideology because members of a capitalist community must respect the liberty of everyone. The claim was made that free enterprise is not always best. I don't know quite what to make of this claim, because the concept best is very difficult to understand unless we have a standard of value. And what is it that we judge a political system by? What are the standards by which we judge a certain system as best? Inasmuch as I find that the capitalist liberal, as the old sense of the term used to have it, the liberal social order made it possible for all members of the community, at least by law, to exert their individual efforts to achieve their own excellence, and that other systems prohibited some members of the community to make that exertion. In that respect, I would maintain, yes, that free enterprise, capitalist, liberal society, or to the extent that it could be understood and pursued various epochs in history, was the best, because more citizens were regarded as moral agents as opposed to means by which other moral agents could achieve their end, say, a feudal lord, or a tsar, or a Caesar, however noble, glorious his ends were, he could use other people for the attainment of those ends. In that respect, such a society was corrupt. I did never claim in my talk that private property was the first virtue. Private property is a political concept. It means that the agency, which is called the government, must protect everyone's effort to acquire and trade what is his own creation. But it's not the first virtue, because to justify that a government should protect people in their own creations and trades, you need a moral theory which defines the first virtues. So I never claimed that private property was the first virtue. I don't agree that security is the first political virtue. I would say that security is an important value to be pursued, but I don't see how anyone can pursue it without liberty. Now, there are two points that Dr. Molnar made about ideas and censorship. He went back to the idea later on, but let me take the first. He said, on the one hand, that we would not want all ideas to have free play in a community. And then he said we wouldn't want abortion to have free play in the community. Now, I would like to separate these two issues. I would endorse, without qualification, the right of every individual to advocate abortion. But now, whether or not abortion itself is a violation of someone's rights is a very different issue. I'm not prepared to argue that here, but it's a very different issue, because to engage in abortion, at least in some people's minds, is to violate some people's rights. So the reason that abortion is opposed is essentially on capitalist grounds. Now, it may be a bad analysis, but those who argue against abortion argue on it because they respect the right of the human fetus to survive. Which is, what does that right mean? That no one ought to interfere with that child's development. Now, whether it's a child or a fetus, I am not prepared to discuss that matter right now. Now, I did not say that capitalism supports all these values. It provides the growth of these values with a framework, a peaceful framework. It is not an end in itself. It is a means to the realization of ends to be pursued by everyone. But the moment you destroy capitalism, namely the liberal framework, you destroy the opportunity of some people to pursue values that they have in their judgment, good or bad, considered to be worthy of support. As far as calling the Roman slave owners capitalists, it betrays a total misunderstanding of what I've been talking about. Simply because somebody owns something and uses it and builds something out of it, that doesn't mean that he's a capitalist in the sense in which I've clearly defined. A capitalist, in my sense, is someone who respects the political philosophy which I have tried to sketch here. A capitalist is not someone who deals in capital. And that confusion may betray ignorance, although sometimes I have more devious suspicions. Now, I have a couple of other remarks that I don't want to take them all up, but I want to say something about mass culture. There's a great deal of worry about mass culture. The bad things about mass culture have nothing to do with capitalism. The bad things about mass culture have to do with the welfare state and the insistence of the welfare state's leaders to impose an egalitarian system such that it caters to the lowest common denominator, to a kind of mediocrity throughout a community. When no one is permitted to enforce egalitarianism, it is a matter of history whether mass culture will or will not develop. The fact of the presence of a mass culture in our society certainly cannot be attributed to capitalism, since capitalism is hardly evident in our legal system anymore. And it hasn't been, at least in my research, it hasn't been fully evident ever in America, and it has been eroded for the last 150 years systematically by the courts, by the academia, and by almost any other intellectual leadership in the society. So to pinpoint something that is occurring in our society today and associated with the philosophy of capitalism is to forget that there is no capitalism today. So whether capitalism caused this, or whether the obstructions of capitalism caused this, is a question that is open for debate. Finally, I do want to put in a, I hate to do this, but I do have to put in a good word for Marcuse. You know, Dr. Molnar said that he hates to do some things, and I hate to do some things. But I must admit that there is no reason why a free people with advocates such as Thomas Molnar on their side should fear Marcuse. Now, if those advocates don't do their job well, if they are not willing to take on the responsibility and advocate their anti-communism, their anti-Marcuseanism, then of course Marcuse will win. But that's not the problem of capitalism. That's the problem of the citizens who live under capitalism. Capitalism never promised you a rose garden. It simply promised you the opportunity to build yourself one. And that distinction is essential. There is no utopia that can be guaranteed by any political theory or any political system. Finally, to address myself to the last remarks of Thomas Molnar, the capitalists who support the leftists, the capitalists who participated in the building up of the Soviet technology, these were not liberal, classical liberals. These were not principled free enterprises. They were people who owned things, who subverted either on the moral front and most often on the political front, because they bought up administrations in government. They bribed, they cajoled people into subverting the free market society in order to achieve their ends of supporting the left. To equate that once again with capitalism is to fail to observe a distinction that I try to maintain throughout my talk.
Mr. McCann flatters himself. He thought that I addressed my 20 minutes to what he had said. You were witnesses that I spoke from this paper. In other words, he said now that he set the standard and I committed the mistake of not abiding by these standards. Yes, I've exercised my freedom. In other words, I was presenting a position, talking to the resolution, and not talking to Tibor McCann. However, now that is my fate. I am supposed to rebut. It's very difficult, because I thought that we were speaking of capitalism and capitalists. Now it turns out that this species has never existed. Not only that the Greco-Roman slave owner was not a capitalist, he merely had a capital, he merely invested it, he merely used it, he merely exploited the products, sold them, but he was not a capitalist. But we were told that those who helped Lenin to power were also not capitalists, they also had the capital, they also used it for certain purposes, they invested it in Lenin instead of in something else, in the Rose Garden. They helped this power develop later during the 20s and even the 30s. Also today, but we were told that these were also not capitalists, they were statists or socialists who were hiding in the disguise of capitalists. Then we were told that the last 150 years, and I thought that we were coming very close to Adam Smith, in the last 150 years there have been no capitalists, that there have been only a subversion of capitalism. So then, who are they? Who is this species? Where are we going to find them? I do hope that in this room there are some who will claim that they are and who will be not read out of the community by Tibor McCann. Now, but this is incidental. Such issues as censorship, Marcuse, and so on. Please, let's now be serious. I do hope that you understand that in a debate there is a certain amount of passion, as it should be. There is a certain amount of, I wouldn't say overstatement, because I would cut the branch on which I'm sitting, but there is a certain amount of emphasis. But I would like not to back down from that emphasis, but merely to articulate it, if only in a few minutes. I was strictly not arguing for, I was arguing against, but was not arguing for socialism in any sense. I have seen it in action, and I tell you the first thing that comes to mind when one sees it, that it is immensely drab, that it is really fragile unless kept up by military power, that it kills the initiative and it kills all that man stands for. But on the other hand, there are other values than freedom. I am taking as an example friends of mine who live in Madagascar, French friends, capitalists, investors, who have made Madagascar much more flourishing than it used to be before the French occupation, who are developing fisheries and forestry, and who are developing all the magnificent natural resources of Madagascar. Yet Madagascar now, under what one could describe more or less as a socialist regime, scientific socialism if you please, is now rejecting and practically forcing these men out. Is this complete insanity? No. There are other values too. There is, for example, nationalism. Yes, but that's an ideology. Yes, of course it is an ideology. But it is also a competitor. There are people at given times, and I would even say there are majorities, which prefer this to that. And at times even they prefer not only security to freedom, and that is not a question of free choice, it is running over to the side which more or less protects you, even if temporarily. It is not a question of free choice. There are people, entire nations, who prefer not to see the foreigner's face on their streets. Now, this is a normal human reaction, and I will not condemn it merely because according to the norms of free enterprise, Madagascar should let all the foreign entrepreneurs come in and develop magnificently that island, which is a beautiful thing. But in mankind's soul and in human communities, there are two or three or 100 things which are all good, but they contradict each other. And therefore a choice must be made. And the choice is not necessarily following Cartesian logic. It follows sentiments, emotions, instincts, tradition, and so on. So the mere fact